Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Geektown Behind the Scenes podcast. I'm your host Dave Elliott, and this week I'm catching up with the sound team behind Apple TV's epic World War II drama Masters of the Air, with supervising sound editor Jack Whittaker and re-recording mixers Duncan McRae and Michael Minkler. Masters of the Air stars Austin Butler and Callum Turner and follows the incredible true story of the 100th Bomber Group, a B-17 Flying Fortress heavy bomber unit in the US 8th Air Force based in England during World War II. It's the third series in a kind of trilogy from the creative team behind Band of Brothers and The Pacific. In Masters of the Air, Jack's expertise as a supervising sound editor ensures that every auditory detail, from the roar of the engines to the subtle nuances of dialogue, contributes to the immersive storytelling experience. Collaborating with re-recording mixers Michael and Duncan, whose mastery lies in blending and enhancing different audio elements, the sound team meticulously crafts a sonic landscape that transports the viewer into the heart of World War II aviation. Their work goes beyond mere technicality, it becomes a narrative force. The rumble of the engines become a heartbeat. The soaring planes echo the bravery of the young pilots. The silence between explosions creates tension that underscores the gravity of their missions. Through their artistry, the sound team add layers of emotion, suspense, and authenticity, enriching the narrative and ensuring that the audience feels the intensity of the story on a visceral level. Jack Whittaker's previous work includes things such as Marvel's Shang-Chi, the Ryan Reynolds movie Free Guy, and the Oscar-winning short War Is Over. Duncan McRae also worked on War Is Over, along with the films One Night in Miami, Hamilton, and John Wick Chapter 3, whilst Mike Minkler's extensive CV includes the original Pacific series, Elvis, which also starred Austin Butler, the Tom Hanks film Greyhound, Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Mamma Mia, Dreamgirls, and even goes as far back as Star Wars A New Hope. So the man has a lot of experience. It was a wonderful interview to do. They're a great bunch of guys. If you've not seen the show, it's all out on Apple TV now. This was actually recorded after only two episodes have gone out, and then Apple asked us to hold it until after the entire series have run. So this is why it's going out now and not going out earlier. It was a wonderful interview. They're a really nice bunch of people to talk to. There's some really interesting stuff in here about the sound in the show. If you'd like to hear more behind the scenes interviews, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast by searching for Geektown Radio. This will give you our weekly Geektown Radio podcast, which brings you the latest TV, film, and gaming news. You can also go to the website at geektown.co.uk for daily news stories and all the latest UK and US TV premiere dates. Here's the interview with Masters of the Air sound team, Jack Whittaker, Duncan McRae, and Mike Minkler.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Thank you for coming on to chat about your work on Masters of the Air. I've seen the first two episodes because they're now out and really, really enjoyed it. I mean, I was a huge fan of the other parts of the trilogy, I guess. It's weird having a trilogy when they're series, but...
Indeed, yeah.
Before we start, do you just want to introduce yourself so people know whose voices are whose?
Mike Minkler, re-recording mixer.
Yes.
Hey, I'm Duncan McRae, re-recording mixer.
And I'm Jack Whittaker, the supervising sound editor for the show.
Good. And usefully you've all got completely different accents, so that'll make it easier for people. Thank you for that. Start off just explaining what each of your jobs really. So what is the job of the supervising sound editor?
Good question. The job of the supervising sound editor is to, we come on at the beginning of Soundpost, depends where we are and what kind of project it is. We basically start with a blank screen and no sound or sound from the picture department, the work track. And then we build that world out. And my job is tasked to build a crew of creatives that we all work together and design the sound for the movie or the show or the whatever that project happens to be, and then get it prepared for mixing. And then at the point when we're ready to take it to the mix, I bring it to the mix and I work with the re-recording mixers.
And the job of a re-recording mixer is? Whoever wants to take that?
I'll take it. What Jack just explained is the more traditional way of doing sound in post, where the supervising sound editor puts his sound editorial team together and they go out and collect the sounds and design the sounds and record the sounds, sound effects and dialogue, and prepare them and bring them to the mix. And hopefully it's all going to work. And in this case, though, it was such a large scale. I was brought on very early on as a re-recording mixer and as a supervising sound editor along with Jack, because we wanted to put our heads together right from the beginning and prepare this thing just with as much effort as the actual performance of getting it done, the execution. So it was a very long process of 2 years of preparing what this thing was going to sound like. And that means recording sound effects, coming up with ideas for sound effects, a lot of communication with the music department, what they were going to do, what kind of challenges they had and the themes. We knew it was going to be a very thematic music score, but how would they score the action scenes and how would it complement the sound effects? And then there was a huge task of the dialogue. We have 300 speaking parts in this film. So there's production recordings that were massive amounts of production, and some of which was unusable. So it had to be replaced with ADR. And so that started very early on as well. And that task took over a year of re-recording the main actors and as well as the background actors. Thousands and thousands of loop lines are in this film.
Wow.
Either as replacements for unusable dialogue because it was noisy, or additional dialogue or different performances. The actors loved coming in to re-perform their scenes because they wanted to give it more heart, more soul, more meaning, a lot of emotion, and work on their accents, work on their delivery. Most all the actors, most of them are British and they're supposed to be portraying Americans. Mm-hmm. So there was that whole thing that had to be dealt with. Mm-hmm. But they really also wanted to give it a lot of heart and soul and emotion. So they spent a lot of time redoing their performances and making them better. It wasn't just a matter of cleaning up tracks. It was making performances better. So it was a huge, huge process and undertaking. And that's why it took so long. But we had to give it thought from the very inception until the end. And we were changing all the way to the very last day of the mix. Even beyond the last day of the mix, we had to keep coming back in for even more new, fresh ideas, new, fresh materials. We were able to work with military advisors who kept us on a straight path of authenticity. Mm-hmm. And we were always able to rely on them, communicate with them, and ask them questions right up to the last day of the mix. So it was a wonderful, wonderful building process that never stopped.
Wow. It's interesting, particularly with the ADR stuff with this, because ADR, where they're having to resync dialogue, match it up with what they're showing on screen, you've got quite a unique thing with this, because there's a large portion of it where you don't see their mask moves because they're wearing masks in the sky. So I'm guessing that makes it slightly easier for them to change the dialogue if they need to.
Well, it would seem obvious that it would be easier, but it wasn't necessarily, because if you look at their eyes are speaking. Mm-hmm. And so you couldn't just throw a line in there and expect it to match.
Yeah, of course.
It took a lot of work.
You mentioned working with the music for this as well. I know Blake Neely did the theme for it, which these days he's probably known quite well for a lot of the Arrowverse DC stuff. Of course, he worked with Michael Kamen and did the theme for the Pacific. He came back to do the theme for this. Was he the composer throughout the whole thing, or were there other people involved in the music side?
Blake was the composer for the complete series. He and Gary have worked together, and Mike and Blake and Gary have worked together on Greyhound previously.
Right.
And other pictures. He really has a really good shorthand, right, with Gary.
Yeah, and Blake did also work on the Pacific with Hans Zimmer and a couple of other people.
Yeah.
With this one, he was on his own. Gary loves what Blake does because, I'm talking about Gary Getzman, our producer.
Yeah.
He loves Blake because of what Blake delivers thematically, heroic music.
Yeah.
That was the number one thing that Gary wanted. And then, of course, there were the action sequences. That's where we had to come in communication with a lot. We had nothing to do with the themes, but we did have something to do with the type of music that would be able to play. And the way he scores it, it's very versatile. And you can take his musical pieces apart and recut them. You can recut all the components of any piece of music. And so there was a lot of recomposition of the music throughout the course of the mix. As the scenes changed, as the effects changed, as the dialogue changed, as the picture was growing with VFX, the music had to adapt. But that's the way he prepares it. It's all very adaptable.
Yeah. I mean, he's a wonderful composer, and the music in the show is fantastic. In terms of some of the other sound effects you're finding in this, obviously there's things like the engines for the B-17, the Flying Fortress. What did you do to create that sort of noise?
Well, we started off by going out and recording a working B-17, which is reasonably rare these days.
Mm.
We got access to that for about 4 days, and we took myself and Mike and some of the sound crew and our effects location recorder is Charlie Campagna, who's part of Formosa, who's just a fantastic guy. And we went to Arizona and we mic'd this thing every which way but loose, and then recorded it for 4 days with everything we could get. I mean, the planes are just sonically amazing things. They make so many different noises, so many different pitches, so many different sounds, different types of noises. So we wanted to capture as much of that as possible. And then we brought that back and we cut it and then started building on that and working on the character of the plane. And then when we got to the mix, that's something like maybe Duncan, you could touch on, because we really continued to work on that character.
Yeah, absolutely. The all of these different recordings that Jack and his team brought to the mix allowed us to lean on different angles, different microphones, different weight arrangements. And it gave a lot of flexibility when moving between planes and within a plane itself, and the exteriors as well, to give a lot of character. So it isn't just a constant steady the whole time that we're in there. It has range, it breathes, it struggles, and it has triumphant moments where we really feel that power roaring.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting challenge in the sound design for this, I guess, because you're in different parts of the plane, you're in very different situations. How do you then go about sort of adding the combat stuff? Where are you getting the effects for that? Are there sort of bullets flying and that sort of stuff? Is that stock stuff?
I wouldn't say any of the sound in this show was stock, because we had the time and the project that deserved it to customize all of the library for this thing, really.
Right.
Formosa has a world-class library.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go from there, and then we go and record as much as we can. And Charlie was out recording for this show a lot. The guns, German planes, interiors, you know, shaking bits of planes, plane wings, interiors of metal that shake. We recorded black powder stuff for some of the explosions. There was a lot of recording, and so we were able to customize the whole thing. And we always move forward, like as Mike said, like maybe I was saying, talking about the role of the supervisor in the traditional sense, but these days always try and make the track play. Like the track should start off on day one of the mix being the best it can be and sounding as great as it can be, and it certainly did. That just gives the ability to these guys to take it to another level from that point, because they're not spending all day long like sifting through 10,000 tracks. You know, the thing is designed on day one. So I would say it was a real challenge to get the sounds for this project, but also it was great because the sounds for this project are also incredibly interesting sounds. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're kind of fortunate in that way, right? A period piece from that era, the vehicles, the plane, you know, on the ground, the vehicles sound amazing. The crowds that we were able to record for the show, so rich, all of this stuff. And then we go up into the air, we have these amazing, noisy creatures of machinery, and it's a blessing to be able to work on something like this.
Yeah, and as it's been, I think, on Band of Brothers and Pacific, the sound has always been important on those projects, but I think specifically with this, because of the fact that you're trapped in an aircraft for quite a lot of it, the sound, I think, is so important in this show to get that feel and that environment. Was there anything that was the trickiest sound for you to capture?
Well, I don't think there's any really tricky sound, but what the trick that we are always doing every day, all day long, is to keep the emotion mm-hmm. correct at any given moment. It could be a lighthearted moment or a very tragic moment. The emotion must be maintained by the sound. The sound effects, the dialogue, and the music all play a part in that. And when you have sound effects that Jack brings in, they are layered, they are custom, they're authentic sound effects that have been layered with sweeteners and customization so that when we get it into the mix, it can be altered slightly. It can capture the emotion better at any given moment simply by the manipulation of those tracks. If you just come into a mix with a bunch of sound effects that are simple or
generic
or singular, there's nothing deep and rich about them, you got nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. You come in with dialogue with just a bunch of people saying words, you got nowhere to go. And the same with the music. So we had to be able to maneuver everything, needed to be able to be maneuvered to give us the most emotional content at all times.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you kind of talk about it as being its own character in the show, and it is the thing that sort of holds it together, I think, with the sound in this as well. It's a really amazing piece of work. Is there any particular bit that you are particularly proud of that you thought came out particularly well?
Duncan, what are your favorite sequences in the episode?
Well, I feel like we have done a really great job of not allowing constant or steady sounding moments to really sit in a stagnant place, to keep the emotion rolling and to keep everything moving. When our guys switch into autopilot on a bomb run ready to drop bombs, we aren't switching to a point where we just sit idle and waiting. Yeah. We're able to continuously shift that focus and shift the weight around, particularly using Dolby Atmos to really move the audience around when we're switching between planes and to keep that flow and the aggression and the tension up. I think we did a really good job of showing those different threat moments too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say I mean, I don't want to pick an episode, but we're pretty proud of 3 and 5 and 9. The first sequence in 9 is a strong sequence too.
That's in reference to the battle scenes.
Yeah.
There are many battle scenes, but those are the stronger ones. They're a little bit longer and there's a little bit more danger in them. And danger is something that's the second they put their suits on to the moment they land on the ground, and they are in danger. It's a very good chance that they're going to die. Mm-hmm. So these men are in danger for a good 12 hours per mission. You know, it's about a 12-hour event. And they never know if they're going to come back. And there's danger coming from all sides. It's from the enemy planes, enemy fire, the ACAC fire, which is there's the possibility of their own engines quitting on them. There's possibility of their own ordnance going off. And then there's times when they're not even fighting the enemy. They're fighting the weather conditions. They can't see each other in the clouds. They don't have the advanced technology that they have today. They don't know that they might be only 10 feet away from another ship. It's just constant danger. There's 100 ways to die inside that airplane, and they're going to visit that every single mission.
Yeah.
So to keep those sequences going, they last from anywhere from 6 to 30 minutes in length, constantly changing. Danger, 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 danger. Something's always happening. It's very difficult, and the sound effects work is quite remarkable.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you've got those huge battle sequences and that sort of stuff that you're working through. And then you've also got the stuff which is back at the base and the dialogue sequences and that sort of stuff. Do you have a particular preference? Are you working across the whole thing, or is it a case of one person takes a bit more of one type of thing and somebody else takes a bit more of something else?
I would say there's a lot of sound trickery taking place through this show in terms of maintaining energy. Even on the quietest dialogue scene, we are maintaining energy so that the viewer is not consciously aware of what's taking place, but there's always something happening, whether it's a micro sound or a macro sound. It could be the smallest thing to the biggest thing, but there is constantly something keeping the viewer listening that they may not even be aware of. So I would hate to say like, oh, there were air sequences and then dialogue scenes, because I think it it would do disjustice to the dialogue scenes, because to me, they were, we love some of the episodes. There's some episodes on the ground too that are just fantastic. And we're really fond of those, all of them, in fact. But it wasn't like action dialogue. It was really a continuous piece of energy. As Mike says, the keeping whatever that emotion is for that scene, for that chapter, that's what we were doing. And that's what actually kind of Gary said on that first spotting session. It's like, I'm not going to tell you you need a car there. Let's not talk about the blocks of it. Let's talk about the emotion of it. Storytelling, always, he always talks about storytelling, and something that getting to work with Mike, you know, Mike is all about storytelling, and it's a special thing. It's like it's there on the screen, you know.
Yeah.
Even the dialogue scenes are so full of emotion, and these guys, they take their breaks from the flights, from their missions, but the missions never leave their mind. So even though they use techniques of distraction to try to keep their minds off of those flights, it never really does leave them. And you feel it in these guys when they're just talking amongst each other, or when they're talking to a girlfriend. You can feel it in their emotion. Their struggles never end. You know, and these men were there for a long period of time. I mean, some men only literally, there's mention in this film about some guys died on their first mission, their first time up.
Yeah.
And other men made it. A few guys made it to 25, which let them go home. They had the ability to go home. But one guy went, he did his 25 missions, and he didn't want to go home. And he went on to make 53 missions. That was Rosenthal.
Yeah.
So every man is there to do his job, but they all do it a little bit differently. It affects them very differently.
Yeah. One thing that I think the show does so wonderfully and is so beautifully enhanced with the sound is how rickety and dangerous and how fragile those planes are, and the situations that they're flying through, like you say, can die at any moment. It's a really phenomenal series, and the sound really adds so much to that. A couple of last questions for you, because I know this is sometimes a thing with sound people. Wilhelm Scream, did you sneak one in there at any point?
Absolutely not. it was brought up a few times, you know, hey, Jack, come on. No. Jack wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it.
We could have another podcast about the Wilhelm Scream some other time. But yeah, there is not one in the show.
There is something else, though. There's a McMoyler little gift.
We have. Yes. Not to say there isn't exactly
something like that.
We have our own Easter eggs in the show for sure.
Okay.
But maybe more sort of bespoke to this project.
Yeah, but we never really wanted to break the mood at any particular time. So we wouldn't want to, we would never do anything silly. Although we do have a couple little things that are personal to a certain number of people, but even they would not laugh, but they would respect it.
Yes. Excellent. It is one of those things that I occasionally hear it in something and it does pull you out. So whilst I find it fun, it does depend on the project, and I entirely get why. Last couple of questions, and these are the same for everybody that I talk to. What TV shows are you guys watching right now?
Great question. At the moment, I'm watching True Detective, the new one.
Yes.
But he's been talking about The Crown for the last year and a half.
The Crown. Who doesn't love The Crown?
Yeah.
It's the best. What about you, Dunks?
Having a good laugh making my way through Righteous Gemstones.
Ah, yes. Much beloved. Yes.
What about you, Mike?
Only Murders in the Building.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm a lightweight guy.
Yeah. But that's a beautiful, wonderful, silly series. I adore that show. It's fantastic.
And so well made.
Oh, yeah.
Only Murders in the Building is magnificently made work.
It is.
Really is.
It's funny and beautiful. And I absolutely love it. Lastly, to each of you, if you had the opportunity to work on any TV series, can be either something historic from the past, something present day, or some sort of future genre that maybe you haven't worked in, what would it be? It might be a bit more difficult for Mike because I know he's worked on some brilliant, huge projects.
Exactly. But I'll start. Yeah, I would love, I've worked on a lot of different genres of project. All of them are great in their own way. I would love to work on a Western. If someone's making a Western, I'm your man. I would love to do that.
Awesome.
I love a good fantasy adventure that gives us a lot of opportunity to build a world with sound around what we're seeing as well.
Yeah.
That's always a lot of fun, being really creative in that sense.
Well, there's a couple of films that I'd love, and I wished I did work on them, but I don't want to name what they are. I wouldn't necessarily change them, but I have thought of, boy, it would have been great to work on that one. But I appreciate other people's work. And
yeah,
over the years, you know, and I love films going back all the way into the 30s.
Yeah.
I'll watch a black and white film from the 30s any day. I love them. I have so many favorites, I can't really even pinpoint any of them.
Awesome. Thank you for spending a little bit of time to chat about the show. I'm really enjoying it. It's out on Apple now, so I hope a lot of other people are watching it, and it's just fantastic. Good luck with whatever you do next as well. It's been lovely talking with you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Thank you. We'll talk to you again soon, mate.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Bye.